Welcome to the 21st. I'm Mary Hansen. Coming up later this hour, whenever it rains in Centerville, Illinois, wastewater floods residents' homes and yards. We'll speak with a longtime resident of the town. And Springfield's history goes well beyond just Abraham Lincoln. Today, we'll talk about some of the efforts to preserve the city's Black history and ask what else historian Catherine Harris would like to see recognized. But first, in the fall of 2018, sexual harassment allegations came to light against University of Illinois law professor Jay Kaysen. It turns out there had been years of complaints against him from women who said they experienced unwanted advances, touching, and comments from the tenured faculty member. The university determined his behavior was inappropriate and unethical, but that it did not rise to the level of a violation of the university's sexual misconduct policy. That decision drew criticism, and some faculty members said the bar for what qualifies as sexual harassment was set too high. But now a new report with more claims against Kaysen from 15 women finds that he did violate the school's sexual harassment policy. This prompted the dean of the law school to call for, quote, serious sanctions up to and including dismissal, end quote. For more on the latest in this investigation, we're joined by Rachel Otwell, a reporter for the Illinois Times. She reported on sexual harassment at Illinois universities for NPR Illinois and ProPublica's local reporting network. Also joining us is Kathy Lee. She's a resident of Urbana with friends at the law school who experienced harassment. Rachel, Kathy, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Rachel, before we get into the new details of the case, let's recap how this all began. In October of 2018, there was a complaint against Jay Kaysen, a law professor at the U of I. What did that allege?
Well, if we start at the very beginning in terms of what's known publicly, I think we have to start at a Me Too forum that was held at the College of Law in October 2018. That the point of it was to talk about Me Too in academia, and most people were none the wiser to the fact that Jay Kaysen, a law professor there, had been through his own investigation after three women alleged sexual harassment on his part. The investigation ended up finding that he had violated a code of conduct, but not the sexual harassment policy. There had also been 38 witnesses as part of that investigation. And so those who knew about it but knew that the university was not addressing anything publicly had concerns about what this meant going forward. He's teaching in a regular capacity. Students who, you know, maybe they have a past with sexual violence. Maybe they would make a decision about what classes to enroll for differently, knowing this past behavior. Those were the kinds of concerns that I think people had going into that forum. And then having Kathy Lee here today is wonderful, because without her, I don't think any of this reporting would have been done, because reporters were in the same boat of being none the wiser.
Exactly.
So
Kathy, as Rachel mentioned, you were the one who brought this up at a Me Too forum in 2018. You spoke about what some of your friends had experienced at the law school. What made you want to come forward in that moment?
Oh, thanks for the question. Well, when I saw that there was this forum about Me Too in academia, it just seemed so ironic that there would be a forum at the law school, which sort of gave the impression that they were participating in the Me Too movement, whereas I knew behind the scenes they were actually experiencing a Me Too situation in their own environment, and students and other faculty were not aware of the situation. So I came forward because I wanted to speak out on my friend's behalf and just make sure that everyone in that community was aware that this investigation had gone on and that the university seemed to have done its best to keep everything very quiet under the guise of, this is a confidential issue, this is about personnel, we can't share this information. And I've heard that many times before in situations like this. And I think that kind of privacy and secrecy allows victims to come forward and have nothing positive come out of their experience. So my motivation was really to try to protect other students, faculty, and other people who were interacting with Kaysen, because it just seemed like there was potential for this to continue.
And so, Rachel, as this investigation came to light and was discussed, why was the university criticized over its handling of these investigations? or these allegations?
Sure. So as we mentioned, the university report that was subsequently uncovered by media because of what Kathy Lee brought to light detailed the allegations of harassment from three women. And then also a letter was found by reporters who had requested records. I think this one originated from his personnel file, but a letter from all the way back to 2002 showing that there was a history here of unwanted sexual behavior that the people in charge were privy to, and that Kaysen had repeatedly been given advice on how to behave in a more professional manner. And so after the report that was finalized in 2017 was made public, there were calls from student groups, the student Bar Association, for one, saying that Kaysen should resign. And he wrote a letter to the law community largely admitting to the behavior and apologizing for the conduct as described by victims, and said he would take a voluntary unpaid leave for the calendar year of 2019. And so the criticism was that, you know, while he might be voluntarily going through this process, why were there not more severe sanctions in the first place? And to get more severe sanctions, his behavior would have had to qualify as sexual misconduct. I've heard from faculty in the law community to reach that level, you have to hit a standard of severe or pervasive conduct, and that level, as defined by case law, current case law, is too high for a majority of behavior that people on a common sense basis would qualify as sexual harassment. If you touch someone in a private area just once, according to case law, that might not be severe or pervasive. Meanwhile, in an academic setting, if a professor is engaging in that behavior with multiple women, many would argue that that should qualify as sexual harassment. And I'm going to get a little weedy here for just a second, but I want to point out in the new investigations I've uncovered that I know we're going to get to, the lawyer who investigated for the university kind of made that point himself. He said, while considering whether sexual harassment or not has been taking place, there are very demanding standards established by case law. Those are his words. And then I'll continue to quote him real quick. This sexual harassment standard closely parallels the standard that would apply in a civil damages action against the university for sexual harassment. Thus, if the university could act only in cases where the actor's conduct satisfied this standard, it would be powerless to intervene until the actor's conduct had exposed the university to civil liability, which is why in the first case, it was important to note that he still did violate a policy, but it was the code of conduct, not the sexual harassment policy. And so if they are going to broaden, if the university could decide to broaden what it considers sexual harassment, that's really what's going on right now in terms of what people are asking for. That's part of it.
And so, Kathy, were you satisfied? Rachel sort of walked us through the pieces of both investigations. Were you satisfied with the university's response after you came forward in 2018?
You know, I really wasn't, and I have to say that my friends weren't either. And it's not to say that some things didn't happen. I was really happy to see that students at the law school came forward and they sort of took this on as something that they cared about and made some noise about. But it didn't feel like any meaningful change happened from that. They put together a committee that studied the sexual harassment policies at the U of I, and they've put forward a report that says, we think these changes should be made. But until those policies are actually adopted, nothing has actually changed. It looks like the university's done something good, and they have, but until policy changes, it really doesn't benefit a student at all.
And so, Rachel, just briefly, I know Kathy mentioned what the changes are. What are some of the changes that the University of Illinois committee recommended?
So there's a number of different committees. I'll focus on the UIUC Faculty Sexual Misconduct Committee that came directly in the wake of the situation with Kaysen, and they were tasked with looking at best practices and coming up with suggestions for changes to policies, and they released those last year. Some of the recommendations include things like expanding the definition of sexual harassment beyond the campus's current standard, like I just kind of mentioned why, and hiring more advisors and investigators. So the advisors would be hiring more people who can work with victims as advisors, as confidential advisors outside of the university's investigative process, as well as hiring more investigators within the university's Title IX office. And then also a suggestion about asking candidates for university jobs to waive confidentiality and reveal their disciplinary records. And some of these recommendations were also suggested by, as I mentioned, there's a number of committees. There's a university system-wide committee that considered what the faculty sexual misconduct put together. And they also brought to the Board of Trustees some of these suggestions, including tracking and disclosing findings of misconduct on a need-to-know basis. And then last November, the Board of Trustees voted in support of system-wide recommendations. In terms of implementation, though, These are piecemeal suggestions. It's not something that everything can be taken at once and passed with a single vote. From what I know, broad implementation has not yet happened. And in the very latest that I heard from Robin Carr, who heads the Faculty Sexual Misconduct Committee, he says the provost's office has created an implementation team, is still soliciting input from stakeholders, and the recommendations are being broken down into buckets. Then there are some changes like creating budget lines for more of these confidential advisors that he says have already begun.
So there's movement on implementation, it sounds like, beginning. But getting back to the J. Kaysen investigations, it looks like there's new information that has come to come to light. He was slated to return to the university to teach in January. That's law students found out in December that that wasn't happening. He was going on administrative leave. And now there's the new investigation, Rachel, that you received through public records request, and the letter from the law school dean that said that he recommends that Kaysen be dismissed. That stricter action should be taken against him. What has changed in that case?
So the most recent investigations include details from as many as 14 people is how they qualified it. Well, that's one report. It's broken into one report. One has 14 people's allegation, and those allegations date back over a period as long as 15 years. And then there's a separate report that details a series of actions in 2014 of a sexual or gender-based nature regarding a single former student. And so in that one, there were allegations of inappropriate touching, repeated attempts to get this person one-on-one in situations that were not for professional matters. And the investigator himself said that the touching bordered on sexual assault and found that Kaysen had violated both the code of conduct as well as the sexual misconduct policy in those cases.
And so I want to be sure to get to I know you've done some reporting on this. How has Kaysen responded to the findings of the report, and what has the university said?
Yeah, so Kaysen overall says there's no evidence that supports many of the findings. And he says he's not been treated fairly by the university. He stands by the statement he made back in November of 2018, where he said he's committed to acting in a manner beyond reproach, and he understands that he needs to be more mindful and self-aware of his actions. He's gone through professional counseling. He says he's about to be punished for a third time now for some of the same basic conduct. And then when I asked, do you know what this means for your future at the U of I, he says, I don't know. And then the university told us that Kaysen's not currently teaching in the law school or anywhere else on campus and is not permitted to be present at the college and has not been allowed there for over a year, and that in lieu of this new Because of the new investigation and these new findings, the university is initiating the process required for the imposition of severe sanctions up to and including dismissal. There's Article 10 of the university statutes that sets out a process that will have to be gone through for that to take place. So we're still, you know, keep your eyes on the space, as they say, and then Kaysen for now is on unpaid administrative leave, and we know that he his salary is more than $230,000.
Yeah, still a developing situation. But Kathy, in just the minute we have left, what would justice look like to you in these types of situations?
That's a great question, and I would say it's tricky because I don't know that there is such a thing as justice in this scenario. Once a victim has come forward, they lose something they're never going to get back. They lose confidentiality. They lose privacy, credibility with some people, and a lot of opportunities that might have been available to them if they didn't come forward. So I would say the only thing that looks like justice is having something incredibly meaningful come out of it. In this case, I think that would be Jay Kaysen no longer working at this university, and it would mean that the university implemented new code of conduct that really could protect students in a more meaningful way.
And that's all the time we have for now. We've been joined by Rachel Otwell, Illinois Times reporter, and we've also been joined by Kathy Lee, an Urbana resident who's sharing at a Me Too forum inspired this reporting. Thank you both so much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks, Mary.